House Finance come to order. It's 6:35 p.m. on the 11th of April, 2014. We have members present: Representative Munoz, Representative Guerra, Representative Costello, Stoltz, Co-Chair Osterman, Representative T. Wilson, and Representative Thompson. We have two matters before us today. House Bill 287, the royalty bill, which may change. And we have House Bill 89, which we'll have before us as soon as after we dispense with the first bill, our action on it today. It's I want to announce it's not our intent to try to move it out or to move it out today, because one, we only have seven people here, and two, I think there's still some questions and some vetting to occur. And I guess a good night's sleep over the weekend, if you guys can find any spare time to do that, might help.
So we'll talk tomorrow morning.
Yeah. Yep. So we have back before us House Bill 287. There is a proposed amendment. And Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I'd like to rescind my amendment the other day, which would have been amendment number 1A.3.
Okay, that is taken away from consideration.
Okay, and then if I may, I'd like to move amendment. Do I do a replacement or do you want a different number?
Why don't we just call it just so so we have clarity of the issue.
Okay, so I'd like to move amendment number 2.
No, replacement amendment number 1.
Okay, replacement amendment number 1, which would be 8.5.
Either way would work, but
okay.
I will object. I think we're going to want a combination of the two sponsors from the House Finance Committee as well as the administration on this one. Perhaps the sponsors of the amendment can just give the brief introduction and then defer to the administration.
I'm going to let Representative Thompson, if that'd be okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. we went through the original amendment number 1, so you're familiar with that. This is replacement amendment number 1, and it does make three changes. On page 3, line 7, it changes the amount of the credit to be received in this section from $15 million per refinery to $10 million per refinery. The second change is on page 4, where that the credit for investment would be changed from 10% to 40%, and qualifying infrastructure expenditure included in the state during that tax year, or $10,000. So basically what this does is change that to where it would be 40% with a maximum of $10,000 credit.
$10 million.
Or $10 million credit, yeah.
I hear you can't do anything.
More zeros. And it does keep in the $20 million maximum that you can have with the combination of the two credits. The third change is adding a little bit. It expands the qualified infrastructure credit per refinery needs to include the transport of refined petroleum products or petroleum-based feedstock. And that is to take care of trying to get some of the piping to two of the refineries, and that can be used also then as part of their infrastructure additions.
Mr. Chair, sorry, where is that? That last one?
Oh, excuse me, that was on, it's on page 5.
Line 21.
Line 20, 21.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Mr. Balash, and when in discussing the changes, it'd probably be I don't know if anybody's been watching the probably to the overlying which is this is now almost a sub bill. From familiar as the public, or for the first time, assume there's a different audience.
Be happy to.
And we might not have remembered everything.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joe Balash. I'm the commissioner designee for the Department of Natural Resources. The amendment that is before the committee is one that the administration supports. The underlying issue that we are confronted with is the unhealthy state of our in-state refining industry. And with the announced closure of Flint Hills in North Pole that was made back in February, we know of certain costs that will definitely increase on the part of the remaining refinery there in North Pole at for PetroStar's facility, and are greatly concerned at the consequences we will face as a state if we were to lose the additional refineries that PetroStar operates both in North Pole and Valdez. Now, the economic consequences I was able to speak to the other night, I wanted to take a minute to talk about some of the benefits that we see from these refineries that operate here in Alaska, if I may. The quality bank payments that Mr. Chapito spoke to with regard to the fees that are paid into the system by the refineries who degrade the oil quality coming off of taps is reflected back in increased revenue for the state. We see an increase in the value of our royalty as a consequence. We also see a benefit on the tax side. Our estimates on the royalty piece are much more precise because we see it specifically reported in the royalty values. The tax is a tougher one to get real precise on because of the way it flows through on individual taxpayers. That said, the royalty value on those quality bank payments is around $20 million in 2013. The tax impact then is approaching an additional $30 million for a total roughly of $50 million. Now, in addition, when we sell our royalty in kind, we typically sell it to in-state refineries. And in the last 3 years, we have a track record of having achieved a higher value by selling in kind to these refineries than we would have received had we left the oil in value and left it with the producers. That difference in total over the last 3 years, so that's calendars 11, 12, and 13, exceeds $136 million. So these are real impacts, real benefits to the Treasury that we see from having these refineries operating in the state. Exactly what those numbers look like if the refineries were to shut down is in question. Certainly, we would continue to look for opportunities to sell our royalty for some marginal premium. We might be able to do that, hard to say, but the quality bank matter is one that if you believe FERC has gotten the quality bank formula exactly right, then in theory, that quality bank adjustment would no longer be necessary because our oil coming out at the southern end of taps would be more valuable. I personally don't subscribe to that particular theory. It's been hotly contested in front of FERC, is in fact being contested in front of FERC right now. So exactly what that would look like in the end is not clear, but what we know today is that the Treasury impacts that we see that are positive from the refineries that are operating exceed the sticker price on this amendment. And it's something that we think is still warranted. We believe that the consequences economically of these refineries shutting down in the long run will be quite negative for the state, particularly if we see a return to a normalized price for ANS crude. So, Mr. Chairman, we did consider a variety of ways to address this particular challenge and particular problem. We did consider just selling our royalty at a cheaper price, at a discounted price, and we considered quality-based tax credits instead of the ones before you. But each one of those options created problems of their own or created an unlevel playing field for certain refineries that are not connected to TAPS. And we ultimately landed on something that in this package we think hits the right combination. Number one, it provides an incentive to producers to choose to sell their oil to in-state refineries. That's the royalty piece, the royalty valuation piece. The second is the capital investment incentive. That's the credit that now before you is at 40%, capped at $10 million annually. There are investments that can be made in these facilities that would make them more efficient and ultimately more profitable so that they can compete more effectively for the fuel products that are needed both for military and commercial aviation as well as the fuels that we need for commerce and living here at home, be it home heating oil, diesel, gasoline, and the like. And finally is the refinery credit, and as I mentioned the other night, is a credit that is modeled in part on the small producer credit we have for the oil and gas production tax system. And it's a fixed amount that if an operation refines more than 17,500 barrels per day on average over the course of a year, they would qualify. That should keep a couple of operations that exist up on the North Slope from qualifying. We're targeting those facilities that produce the products that our communities rely on, that our industry, our commerce relies on. So thank you for the indulgence there, Mr. Chairman. I did want to put a couple of those things on the record for the benefit of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Bailash. Commissioner Bailash, this is... May I speak?
Please, go ahead.
Okay. You did that to me once before. So it's thank you, Commissioner Bailash. We're faced with a lot of issues where folks are coming to us, and basically this is asking us for money, whether directly or indirectly. The Alaska Railroad will be coming before us and have. They want $20 million this year and $70 to $80 million in the coming years and $5 to $7 million a year for operating and for a passenger service that nobody would call economic under the most charitable of terms. But we're considering and trying to find ways to support that because the railroad's passenger services buttresses our tourism industry, which provides jobs and has a number of underpinnings. And this one almost seems like a modest ask compared because there's a lot of good-paying jobs and actual taxpayers and so a lot of buttressing military, much like the railroad does as well, buttresses opportunities for our military. And I, you know, this on the prima facie, and it is money, and it's an economic assist for businesses, which in many aspects are healthy businesses in their larger portfolio. Maybe you can talk a little bit about how businesses behave and how much are they. I don't think they're philanthropies by any measure. And what are maybe reemphasize some of the underpinnings of the economy, just like we're asked to make that major subsidy decision for the railroad, which there's it's a no business would say, give me $80 million to be able to make a couple million dollars net on a good year for, and then plus another five to seven. I mean, it's not a business decision you would make absent a lot of other overall concern for all the other economic connectivity and underpinnings. And maybe you can provide something that makes this stuff that has, when you're asked to spend a lot of money, has a little bit of the taste of bile because you're asked to transfer money that's that has value in so many aspects. Help us out and maybe give us a better explanation and why this is so critical. I think that's really, it's been missing in the explanation and really elaborating. Maybe the Interior delegation as they jump in and talk about that. But why don't you start, Commissioner Balash, and then we'll go to Representative Wilson, and then Guttenberg, and then Thompson. I figured it'd be the interior folks carrying a lot of the discussion.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Department of Natural Resources, historically, when conducting these royalty sales, has gone through a fairly extensive best interest finding process to support those sales. And in the examination of economic benefits to our communities, particularly in the interior, where this has been studied in fairly strong detail.
More consequences. I think that's what we need to do.
That's right. That's right. We are able to identify the contributions that these particular facilities make. They support dozens, if in most cases, if not hundreds, of high-paying jobs to families that are able to enjoy comfortable lives and support their families, paying property taxes, contributing to our charities, our communities, and all of those wonderful things that we've looked to in these findings processes. But when we had to consider the potential knock-on effect of PetroStar closing in addition to the Flint Hills facility closing in the interior, we started to run through what it is these facilities make, who they sell it to, and what that would mean. Now, as somebody who grew up in the Air Force, the first thing I thought about was the supply of jet fuel for our Air Force bases. And PetroStar is the provider of that particular fuel. They are able to manufacture it right here in Alaska and distribute it via truck, barge, and rail in various ways to the military bases. And I've learned since that it's not just the Air Force bases, but also the Coast Guard station in Kodiak. So in considering what would happen if these facilities were to shut down right now because of this upside-down position in the pricing of crude oil, we started to ask some of the people in the administration and elsewhere what would happen. And it's rather sobering, Mr. Chairman. The consequences with regard to the military is there would absolutely be increased cost pressure and a knock-on effect for the continued operation of our facilities, especially those in the interior, but even the ones in South Central. My understanding is that this would probably strike a fatal blow to Alaska's chances to base the F-35. That's something that we think is not only important to Alaska, but also important to the nation. So this is something that carries some pretty heavy consequences in that arena. When we started to think about the air cargo situation, in that particular context, what we're seeing right now with, again, this upside-down position in the pricing of ANS crude versus West Texas, today, right now, the jet fuel that's able to come in to the port of Anchorage and come in from external refineries is competing against the Alaska-based and Alaska-produced jet fuel and doing so rather effectively. They're getting a larger and larger share of the jet fuel market at Ted Stevens International. If we don't act, and if these refineries in state shut down because of this cost of crude situation, then what we're going to find is they shut down. If prices then normalize, imported jet fuel is going to become the price maker, and in all likelihood will drive the price of jet fuel at the international airport higher. Now,
I can tell you my ag industry saw when Agrium closed down, fertilizer went from $200 a ton to guess how much? $1,200. No, please proceed.
So having the international jet traffic that currently stops in Anchorage is something that drives a lot of economic activity, and that's a benefit to all of us statewide. Now, one of the things about the air cargo fleet is that they are generally airframes that used to be passenger vehicles. And as they age, they are moved from the passenger business into the cargo business. And over time, bigger and more fuel-efficient planes will enter the air cargo fleet. When we see incremental costs added to the jet fuel price in Anchorage, our fear is that we are going to become even more challenged from a competitive standpoint with that air cargo traffic. And we've seen, I think, some signs of that already in terms of where we sit relative to some of the other international air cargo hubs in this hemisphere. And it's something that we think we're going to have to keep a very close eye on and make sure that we are able to drive as much competition towards that jet fuel market as we can to make sure those prices don't get to a point that pushes folks like FedEx and UPS to relocate their hubs away from Anchorage to other airports. And ultimately, those economic consequences will roll down to the people who live here. I know that the refining industry in particular gets a lot of blame and anger directed at them for the high cost and high price of gasoline and home heating fuel. But Mr. Chairman, that's the price that is being realized in the market with locally produced product that doesn't have to travel at the end of a very long chain. And our concern is that if these refineries in state go down, that all of the fuel products that we rely on are going to be in one way or another priced on imported products. We will perhaps be able to maintain the refinery at Nikiski that Tesoro is operating, but that would put us at one refinery instead of three. It would reduce competition, and I think a logical conclusion is that prices would go up. Prices on gasoline, prices on diesel, prices on home heating fuel, even marine diesel. So
you're forgetting one commodity. If you talk to the transportation industry and Department of Transportation, I think you know the ingredient I'm talking about.
Asphalt.
Asphalt. And where was that produced?
Flint Hills was the largest producer of asphalt, and I think Tesoro is going to be able to help. But there's going to be an impact there as well. So, Mr. Chairman, if these refineries close, we are very concerned about the economic consequences, the domino effect that will fall, and the overall quality of life enjoyed in North Pole, Valdez, and Nikiski will be degraded. It will put pressure on our local communities' budgets. It will put pressure on our social service agencies. Stress in the home, unfortunately, leads to increases in domestic violence, substance abuse, and those are the kinds of things that jobs do a lot to remedy, especially good, well-paying jobs. And we did not want to come forward with something that would have this big of a sticker. We certainly observed the sticker shock on Wednesday night as the committee considered the amendment, but we think that something needs to be done, must be done, or the consequences will be real. And while I think the folks at PetroStar want to stay in business, they're owned in this arrangement by a parent company, ASRC, who's not in the business of charity. They have an obligation to earn a return for their shareholders, and so I think if you were to see PetroStar shutter its doors, you would see a situation very similar to Flint Hills, where Flint Hills is more than happy to sell their North Pole facility and associated infrastructure. But, Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of any serious, credible buyers waiting in the wings to pick up this property. And that's because the underlying business is challenged. This cost of crude is a real problem right now. Fundamentally, the economics and economic theory would suggest that this is an anomaly. This is something that will correct. It will normalize, and WTI and ANS crude will converge back to the historic norms. But it's something that's gone on for more than 3 years now, and we've seen the first casualty. We don't want to see two more.
Thank you. And I wanted the administration. This is an administration bill, and although it's sponsored by a couple members from the Interior, we don't have anybody from Valdez. We don't have a Kenai Peninsula person on there, so it's being carried by the Interior delegation. So that's why I deferred to the administration carrying the first part. So we have Representative Wilson, Guttenberg, and Thompson, and Guerra.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, really the first question is, do we want in-state refining? Because I know when the commissioner came to my office and he dropped the paperwork off, that was the first question I had to ask, is whether or not we want to have in-state refining. And if the answer is no, then we know we're going to import all of this and be very dependent upon the price, which reminds me always when a big box store always moved in, and then the first thing that ended up happening was the little mom-and-pop stores started closing because they couldn't compete on the same level. And we're kind of in that same place right now here. So if the answer, you know, to the committee is, you know, that's not important, then that makes the decision very easy. I don't think that's the answer. I look at the capital being in Juneau, and I know we've had the discussion before, what would happen if the capital moved somewhere else? The economy in Juneau would be very devastated. Could they come back with some other form? Maybe. I doubt it. But, you know, it would be, you know, it's very similar to what North Pole Fairbanks area is feeling right now as they lost Flint Hills. But I guess I just want to remind people that the state royalty oil contract was $2.15, the last contract, over what they could buy it off the North Slope. So you'd ask yourself, well, why weren't they buying it from the North Slope? Well, the contract wasn't there. There's only so much oil that the big three companies, they all have their own contracts, long-term contracts, big ones. And for them, that was the best deal they could do. So the state did very, very well off of having Flint Hills there buying their oil. Well, now you've lost that already. If you don't find someone else who wants to make another contract, we're going to have one with Tesoro. But from my understanding, Tesoro is a backup because they get a lot of theirs from other places at more affordable price. So being important, too, talks about our bases. Right now we refine for both bases, Eielson Air Force Base, also Fort Wainwright and J-Bear as well. The airport in Anchorage does that. So I guess it reminds us that heating oil at one time used to be affordable. I cannot imagine if we had a truck heating oil for the interior and how many times it would touch it, what that would do just economically for us at this point and for the other things that it does. So I feel what we put forward this time, making it to where $50 million would have to be invested to be able to get that second $10 million, because I think it's going to take efficiencies by these refineries to get competitive. I think for PetroStar especially, they're going to have to do some upgrades to be able to produce some of the product that Flint Hills was producing, because I, too, have not heard at this point of anybody who's looking seriously at buying it. I actually did have a talk with them and asked them whether or not this would do it to reopen Flint Hills, and it isn't for them. So right now we are really talking about three refineries, but tourism, we give them money back because they put money in. You got to remember, we tax the oil companies a lot of money. It's not a lot about, we do the same thing. I know we're not supposed to meet, you know, mention fish too much because I don't want to get into which way is better. But again, you know, we put them in there. We passed a bill not too long ago about film tax credits. We actually give more to the film industry than what we're asking here. Sadly enough, until we can get our energy issues for the Bush area as well as the interior and some others, we're finding us being uneconomical in so many areas. But right now, I ask, what does 5 years make a difference? $6 between what you can buy it in the lower 48 or buy it off the North Slope, and that's before you even the transportation route. That's just at the wellhead. And you start adding all those things together, and then the Quality Bank as well, where 50% of that money, 45 to 50% of that the federal government taxes, comes back to the state. So it's money that we are bringing in. Yes, this is big money they're putting out, but it's money these industries are putting in. And in fact, we have an oil and tax credit fund that money is put in based on the barrels that come down constantly to be able to do things like this. So I just want to make sure people around the table know that we know this is a big ask. It absolutely is. And I feel your questions have been great. I mean, I was asking the same thing. So I just want to make sure that you realize that I do, and I think others of us realize what this is. But to lose this industry, I think it's going to have so much impact. Giving the money to the railroad, I'm not sure you do after this, because I think it's just a Band-Aid for them, because they're already going to miss Flint Hills. If they move Petrol Star out and you don't have that coming back and forth, they're going to have less and less customers. We don't even know right now, the refinery closing, what impact that's going to have on the railroad and on theirs. I know it's substantial. It just touches so many industries, we can't even tell you how many it does. But I just want to make sure the committee knows that. We know we're asking a lot, and we're happy to answer any of the questions, but thank you for considering it.
Representative Guttenberg, Thompson, and Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about the nature of our refineries. Whether you believe the Quality Bank calculation is correct, is the state getting the value out of the royalties or the ANS, or, and if it's not, did you consider becoming part of that action in front of FERC as the state? I understand the ANS, the premium on ANS, that it's expensive for the refineries. And at the end of the day, I just don't know if we suffer from an efficiency or lack of efficiency of scale, you know, and if in some scenarios this has kind of become part of the norm to keep refining in the state, regardless. So are refineries inefficient by themselves because of their scale? I mean, I know there's some refineries outside that are huge that just, you know, the cost of product coming out of them, regardless of everything else, is a whole lot less expensive. And I just want to get a better understanding of the nature of these three issues. I mean, we know the ANS, we know what that situation is. The Quality Bank, whether we should have gotten involved in the FERC issue, and just the nature of the refineries themselves. Are they too small to actually do the job that we need?
Through the Chair, Representative Guttenberg, with regard to the Quality Bank dispute at FERC, we have intervened as a party, and our overarching goal and position in those proceedings is to ensure a fair system, because we do have an interest, a financial and fiscal interest, in the royalty that is produced that is of higher quality. In this case, Alpine is the best quality crude produced on the North Slope. We have a significant royalty interest in that particular production, and so We don't want to take a particular side in that proceeding that would harm the state's other interests. So, yes, we have intervened. We are participating in those proceedings. With regard to efficiencies, the refineries that we have operating along the TAPS corridor in particular are not the most sophisticated of the variety of refineries that are out there. They, in the lower 48, some of the types of refineries you're talking about are ones that are able to crack the entire barrel. They're able to recover products and value from an entire barrel of crude and not be left with a lot of resid or waste that they have to otherwise dispose of and add to their costs. One of the real beauties of TAPS and the Quality Bank is that it does allow these refineries along the pipeline to take crude off, recover the high-end products, and then put the rest of the stream back into TAPS. I'm not sure that we would see a tremendous difference in their operation if they were to move to a full barrel cracking methodology or system. That's something that I think could be difficult. I think that from what I understand, the folks at Tesoro do a much more complete job of recovering the full barrel at their facility in Nikiski, but I'm not certain that they recover it all either. So the opportunities to improve the plant and be able to recover more of the barrel is something that I think we're hoping to see achieved with the investment incentive that's included here. And, you know, if you think about a $50 million investment, you're going to have to make that $50 million back if you're going to recover your costs there, plus some return on your capital. Well, in the case of PetroStar, you know, they're at best breaking even, if not in the red right now. So how on earth are they going to recover their capital? You know, that it's a question that they would have to evaluate and consider whether or not that investment improves their profitability enough to make the investment worthwhile, to get back above the drowning line. And that's where this 40% investment incentive kicks in. It reduces the cost of making that investment that would otherwise improve their efficiency and increase their profitability to facilitate getting to that healthy space where we need them to be in the long term.
Just a quick follow-up. And how do you measure the return on the investment? Is it just the fact that they don't close?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I think that is the first way to measure it. But that's in the here and now. Longer term, what we would like to see happen is for our locally produced jet fuel to earn back more of the market share for the products that are sold, and in particular the ones that are being imported the most now, jet fuel.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson, and then Garrett, and then Austin.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Commissioner Balazs, I appreciate your presentation and explanations. The impact of losing PetroStar's refineries would be felt statewide. You know, all the way down the rail, or down through the rail belt. Even our possibility of losing Eielson Air Force Base and also the jet fuel that's produced for J-Bear are huge for this state. But it's not only those locations that are on the mainland. PetroStar also supplies a lot to Kodiak. Over 4,000 homes or Kodiak are heated by fuel oil coming out of PetroStar. They also make some propane down in PetroStar Valdez, and it is used locally, and a lot of that propane goes to Kodiak also. The fishing fleet depends on the local refineries to be able to supply them. The Coast Guard base in Kodiak is supplied from PetroStar Valdez for their diesel fuel and for their aviation, for their jet fuel that they use out of that location also. So this isn't just a interior or a northern area. It's not just it's there. It goes into the rural areas up north of Fairbanks. The implement to lose that, we can't even estimate the cost that it would be to the state in increased prices or lost businesses. So this is, to me, something that we have to weigh out, that this is important. This is an economic driver that we need in our state. I think that these credits that we're offering is going to let them streamline their businesses, make them more efficient. I know that PetroStar is in negotiations and talking with the railroad about what they need to do to be able to access and utilize rail. Well, the railroad isn't making a lot of money. This is going to possibly help the railroad also. So there's a lot of things we have to take into consideration. It's a big chunk of money up front, but at the same time, Commissioner Balash talked about how that we're making extra money from in-state sale of our royalty oil compared if we send it all the way down to Valdez and ship it off. And I think those numbers he mentioned were at least $20 million from the Quality Bank, plus their 35% corporate tax in the state. You start adding that up over 3 years, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $160 million that the state gets that they probably wouldn't have if we didn't have those refineries. So this is one of those where you have a balancing act, is what's good and what isn't. But I'm telling you, I think we really need this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Mira, then Osterman, and then Munoz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't support this. I completely agree with the first part of Representative Wilson's premise, which is we need to do what we can to keep the PetroStar refineries open. They haven't told us what their losses are. We don't know if they're $1 million. They were profitable last year, profitable the year before, profitable as far back as they told us. They're losing money this year, but they won't tell us how much. And we're going to give them $10 million under the first part of this amendment a year for the next 5 years, $50 million. Just give them. Whether they make a profit or don't make a profit, whether they pay taxes or don't pay any taxes, $10 million a year. And then the second $10 million, if they invest $25 million in the purchase of equipment for either transportation or manufacturing, they get another $10 million from the state. They don't have to do anything in terms of efficiency. I've heard this talk about efficiency, but there's nothing in the bill that talks about efficiency. So that's $20 million a year. So PetroStar will get $40 million a year from the state for 5 years, $200 million total. Half of that for sure, and then the other half as long as they make $25 million of investments. That just seems like a huge amount of money to give a company without even asking them what they need, without even taking the smallest peek at their books, without even getting the slightest idea what their loss is this year, the first loss they'll have in any of the history they've told us about. I'm sure they've had a loss here in the past, but they didn't tell us of one. There's just got to be a better way for us to help this business. But the worst part of this bill is not that the remedy here doesn't fit the problem. It's not that the remedy here hasn't been analyzed. It's not that this money is being given to a company that won't open its books at all. It's that Tesoro will get $20 million a year, $100 million over the next 5 years, and they don't even want it. They came here yesterday and testified all they want is a renewal of their royalty in-kind contract. That was what this bill was 2 days ago or 3 days ago. And they came in and said, you know, it's not an easy business. We'll take the money. But really, all we want is the underlying bill. Translation, they are not asking for any of this money, and they're getting it. So we're giving $20 million a year to a company that doesn't need it. And then $40 million a year to a company that won't open its books. So let me ask you about the first part. We've been struggling with money in the state. Every time somebody comes to us with a need, we say we're in tight fiscal straits. Why in the world would we give $20 million a year to Tesoro when, to their credit, because if I'm a company and somebody's offering me $20 million, I'll say, yeah, I need it. But to their credit, they didn't even say they needed it. Why is that responsible, just on the Tesoro front?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, the opportunity to provide a public policy and incentive that is applicable to in-state refining is something that we want to weigh very carefully and ensure that we do not, through that policy, pick winners and losers and help specific companies, and rather address the industry as a whole. Now, because we have so few companies operating, that presents a little bit of a challenge. And so, you know, we did look at the possibility of doing a quality bank credit. That's something that certainly would have helped Flint Hills. It would help PetroStar. It would not help Tesoro in any way. And so that kind of a policy would have resulted in a benefit going to one company, but not both. So for that reason, we took a pass on that particular path. With regard to the need from PetroStar, I would take exception to the characterization that we didn't ask or we didn't look. We have looked. Not about to share a company's taxpayer information in public. Just not. What they asked for, completely transparently, was for a volume of oil at a price discounted to royalty and value. They were prepared to take that lower cost for their crude, for our crude, to run through their refineries and operate their business. And if we were confident that we could limit the discount to that contract only, you know, that's something we could live with. We considered doing that, the cost anyway. But because of the likely constitutional problems that presents from an interstate commerce clause perspective, from an equal protection clause perspective, our concern is that it would extend beyond just the 25,000 barrels they were talking about to all 80-plus thousand barrels of royalty production that we have. And, you know, a $5 difference on all of our royalty production would cost far more than what we're talking about here today. So beyond that, we return to the question of picking winners and losers. And if we were to selectively sell our oil to one company at a discounted price, that's what we would be doing. And that's exactly why we would run into constitutional challenge. So, you know, we are happy to consider alternatives, to consider improvements, but we felt it necessary because the negative consequences and ramifications near term, but especially in the long term, to not have the security associated with the manufacture of refined products here in Alaska is not good for the long-term health of the state, not from a fiscal perspective and not from an economic perspective.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. You know, the administration's come to us with a week left in session and changed a bill that was just the renewable royalty contract, which you came before us and testified to, and now turned into a $300 million cost to the state over the next 5 years, $100 million of which goes to a company that didn't even ask for it. There's got to be a better way to do this. I sat down, and I'm not saying I'm brilliant, but I could live with a low-interest loan. They said they need 5 years to get their house back in order. Your bill talks about 5 years. Tesoro doesn't actually need anything, but Petrostar. I could even live with a loan that gives them a 5-year grace period on paying the state back as they get their house in order. A low interest loan that maybe we even lose a little bit of money on, that they start paying 5 years from now, which wouldn't be a terrible idea for the state because 5 years from now we're going to need the money more than we do today. I'm just asking you, and that's what amendment number two is going to be. I'm just asking you to come to us with something that's more fiscally responsible. Because I've never heard of a bill that says, here's $20 million a year to a company that doesn't need it, that never came and asked for it. I guess maybe I have. I can't think of it right now because I'm so angry. I mean, I want $60 million to compensate me for my blood pressure going up as high as it is right now. That's what I want. I don't really. There. But
we did tort reform. I think you're ready to get that.
There has to be a better way to do this because part one of Representative Wilson's statement is absolutely right. We should do something to help this refinery in its first year of loss. But if their first year of loss is $5 million and we're giving them $20 million and they end up with a $15 million profit under this bill, they can give that money to their shareholders. They can give it straight to ASRC. They don't have to share it with the community. They don't have to give anybody a raise. They don't have to hire a single extra person. Let's just say they have a $5 million loss for the next 5 years. This guarantees them $15 million of profits with state money that are no strings attached. They get to keep the money. I can't. It's just a sloppy response to an important problem. So I don't know what else to say other than ask you to consider low-interest loans, something that is more fiscally responsible, because this, on an annual basis, is roughly a $220 base student allocation increase that we've been told we can't give our schools. We could find 100 different places where somebody thinks the money is needed that we've told people they can't have it. So I can't. I don't have even have another word for why I can't support this.
Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These are the times in our process that I hate because I feel like I'm Mr. Grinch from who's trying to steal Christmas. I've got a couple things. First off, I'm a little bit upset over the lateness of this amendment, and I'm secondly upset over the fact that it's basically hijacking Tesoro's royalty. Yeah, we're not bankers that we sit here, but we might as well be considered bankers by the time we get through here and the amount of money that we allocate and spend. But I agree with Representative Guerra that there's a better way. And this administration has spent a lot of time working with things like the shipyard in Ketchikan. They went in there when that shipyard was failing through ADA and were able to survive, to make that shipyard a viable business. If I remember correctly in reading through the budget, there's a certain, I don't remember what the amount of money is that the state's putting into expanding that shipyard this year, but they're doing it through ADA. It's not just a giveaway. It's a program where it's a business plan, and it's a program where they're going to make that entity survive. I know for at least the last 3 years, you guys have been working apparently with the refineries, trying to help them out, but for the last minute to bring this in here and tie it to a bill is all wrong. And it should have been presented the first of the session or the last year when you guys knew something like this was coming. You should have had a business plan out there for them to work with ADA to try to make a business plan out of this and make it survive long term. I don't understand why we have to feel like Mr. Grinch is around here when I think in the long term that this kind of work could have been done a long time ago instead of the last hour of the session, basically, in our basically time frames of trying to deal with something like this. I'd very gladly work on a bill with ADA financing to help them get through what they need to get through. But we've met with Alaska Regional Sort or Arctic Slope Regional. We've met with PetroStar. Nowhere along the way have they suggested that they're willing to raise the cost of fuel for 5 cents a gallon or whatever it is to help pay for this, get them, dig them out of the hole. The Arctic Slope made an investment. I haven't heard them at all say that they're willing to match the money that we're putting up or something, anything, to make it look like that we're going to do something here other than just we're going to give them the money and they're going to run. And it's very difficult to feel this way, to talk this way, when I know PetroStar is a great company. I know that the Arctic Slope is a great corporation. But to be put in this kind of a position is very difficult, and it's a little frustrating to have to sit here and talk this way. But at the same token, I think this is not a responsible request by the administration to do this without something that shows that there's a plan, even to dig them out of the hole they're in. Mr. Co-Chair, remind me yesterday about the seafood industry. 2001, they fell flat on their face when the Chilean and the farm fish came along and drove the price down to less than 5 cents a pound in some places for pink salmon, and they were hurting. So there was some money was put into it, and we bailed them out. But that was federal dollars, it wasn't state dollars. We went around, and it did make a big difference. But they were matching grant programs that they put that $50 million out there. It wasn't just a giveaway, with the exception of that Senator Stevens, Ted Stevens at the time, said that local fishermen in affected areas could get some money out of it as a grant. But it wasn't just a giveaway, and I don't know how we can possibly just give this money away without something that shows it. So I guess you get the point. I'm not supporting this at this point in time. And I would hope that we wouldn't hold Tesoro hostage on their royalty, let their bill go through, and if you guys want to provide us with a bill in the next couple of days that shows a loan program through ADA that will help build out their business and make them solvent in the long term, I'm sure more than happy to look at that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Munoz.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner. Earlier you said that one of the reasons that the refineries are struggling is because the price of ANS crude has not normalized or is not in an it's not at a normal price range. Could you explain that comment and what is a normalized price for ANS crude? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Munoz. Through the chair, we have some information I'd be happy to provide to the committee that shows on a line graph here the difference between ANS West Coast and WTI on a cost per barrel basis. And 10 years ago, in 2004, ANS priced out $2 less than West Texas Intermediate. And that was the case up through roughly 2007. And at that point, ANS and WTI converged. They were nearly identical for the next 3 years, 2007, 2008, and 2009. As we got into 2010, we started to see a divergence, and a divergence that grew and grew, and in 2011 peaked at more than $15 per barrel difference, where ANS prices out at $15 more per barrel than WTI. So when you're talking about the cost of refining product, you start with the cost of the feedstock. You start with the cost of the raw crude, the barrel of oil. So for the next 3 years, 11, 12, and 13, that gap has narrowed a little. We've gone from a $15 situation to something that's more like $10 today. And we expect that in time, that price will converge back to something that is more akin to what we've seen historically. And historically, up until 2007, ANS priced cheaper at a lower price than WTI. Will we get back to that point? I certainly am not going to make a prediction about that. But because oil is a fungible product, it is traded globally, we would expect that that differential will close. I just can't tell you how quickly. So that's what I'm referring to.
And then just one follow-up. Another question on the quality bank that caught my attention at an earlier hearing, and that one of the testifiers said that the payments to the quality bank are having a profound effect on their business. Could you talk about the payments that go, the amount that goes to the state of Alaska, and what, if you have the information over just the last few years, how that payment has changed over the last few years?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I have some numbers from 2013, and they serve as a pretty good baseline for the previous couple of years. But in 2013, the payments into the quality bank by refineries that operate on taps. So we're not talking about what's going on the slope, but just off of the refineries. That total in 2013 was about $112 million. By looking at our royalty payment information, we've been able to determine that approximately $20 million of that was returned to the state through increased royalty value. What you then have to look at is what's going on in the production tax equation. And we are not able to go through taxpayer by taxpayer to determine what the total impact is. But because our production tax system is a profits-based system, and it taxes on the margin at 35%, you can reasonably conclude that after you take the royalty aspect of the Quality Bank off the table, you then look at a 35% margin on the remaining amount, and you're looking at something on the order of, 35% of the remaining 90, and that gets you pretty close to $30 million. So if you take the 20 and the 30 together, that's about $50 million that returns to the Treasury because of the payments made by those refineries into the Quality Bank.
If I could follow up, what do we do? Is there a goal with those funds and how we maintain the pipeline, or are they used for a specific purpose?
Through the Chair, Representative Munoz, the payments into the Quality Bank are basically repairing or making whole other parties, because there's all sorts of varieties of crude that get produced on the North Slope. Each oil field has its own API gravity and quality, and not all barrels are the same. And so originally the Quality Bank was intended to be a way to equalize the parties, because you put each barrel into taps. At the top they might be different, but by the time they get to Valdez, it's one blend of crude oil. And so the people who put in the higher quality crude have contributed value to other people who put in lower quality crude. And so it's a way to try and keep everybody whole. So that works in many ways at the top of the system, but along the way we've got the facilities in North Pole and the one in Valdez that take crude off of taps. They refine a portion of the barrel. They take the high ends, the jet, the diesel, the gasoline, and then the return stream goes back into taps. And that return stream is of lower quality yet. So the refineries make a payment to the other shippers, the other oil producers in the line, to keep them whole.
Are there any other questions from other members that haven't talked?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the Quality Bank, I understand picking winners and losers, but at the same time, I guess I had a resolution when I was talking about in-state refineries. When I was talking about in-state refineries, I was talking about like those refineries in the middle of the state, which would have been North Pole, because there are different things happening there that aren't happening in the others, and that's what we've heard around the table tonight. Is that I don't think anybody has a problem, and everybody I think understands that PetroStar right now in North Pole is underneath different stresses because of the sharing of costs that they had with Flint Hills. For instance, just the pipe that goes between Flint Hills and PetroStar, which actually, and the rail yard that really goes to Flint Hills and not to PetroStar, is $3-4 million just right there in additional cost to PetroStar just by doing what they're currently doing. So, you know, when we talk about keeping everything equal, it's not equal. So, you know, it's kind of like fair, the thing you go to once a year. So, you know, get to that place to start with, I think, is where we are. So since they're only ones that are doing the Quality Bank, I guess I don't understand your argument on picking winners and losers, because we already have part of our other part that we're losing that people may not realize is that we passed a storage tax credit bill a few years ago, and Anchorage area, in that area, they built a big storage tank with credits from that.
A little further south than Anchorage.
Okay, well, a little further south. Still devastating to the
industry. We get blamed for enough.
Okay, sorry. Well, I wasn't blaming you for it. Further south, there was, let me correct that, sorry, for that storage tank, which now allows more at importing of cheaper fuels. So help me understand, and my friends around the table who really want to be my friends, and I don't want to put them in a bad position or hold anybody hostage, which has never been my intent, you know. Why, you know, is it a legal reason that we can't use the Quality Bank for the one that needs it, or is it just some kind of moral issue that somebody's having that we can get over to be able to help the refinery right now, especially in the next few years, while we see if somebody is able to purchase the other refinery, or at least give them a chance to upgrade those things that they are now forced to do because they no longer have a partner. Please.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the hydrocarbon business, and specifically the gasoline, diesel, jet fuel markets, are unregulated markets. We trust the market to produce a price that allows the product to continue to be supplied. And so engaging in a topic such as this, we have been very careful to not upset that market balance, and did not want to engage in a practice or a process that would provide a very clear benefit to one party alone in this unregulated market. So that's why, that is why we decided to pursue this particular path and package and not focus solely on the quality bank. I would not characterize it as a question of morality, not even close.
Follow-up, sir. Okay, so we already, with the tax credit that we gave for that one that's further down than Anchorage, so we already, as a state, unbalanced the world already. So what I feel, you know, and maybe I'm a little close to the situation because it's down the street from me, is that by doing that unbalancing now really is causing part of our issue of what we're trying to rectify. Is that a true statement?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the storage south of Anchorage is for natural gas, and that natural gas is primarily utilized by public utilities, but there is an associated benefit that accrues to Tesoro because they do rely on natural gas to fire their plant. So I suppose you could make an argument that some of the other credits that have been provided to support natural gas deliverability and long-term supply has been a benefit that Tesoro has realized that the other refineries has not.
So one last chance at the legality portion of it, okay, because we've already decided that life's not fair here, okay? Anchorage has gas, Juneau has the capital, and Fairbanks wants its refinery, okay? So I just wanted to divide us up, okay? Yeah, little trucking gas. We don't have that yet, so I can't count it yet. Okay, so I'm just getting the economy scale, you know, at scale. So legally, is there any legality that goes to where we couldn't have a credit for the quality bank, although everybody does? I mean, is there anything that would not keep, you know, that we would not be able to do that?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I'm not aware of a constitutional challenge that would present, but I've not asked counsel directly on that.
I think, Mr. Chair, I think, as I've heard around the table, and I do greatly appreciate everybody, I know this has put you in a bad position. I did tell Tesoro the other day that we had no plans on holding them hostage for their bill. We appreciate the conversation, and we would take it away before we would do that, and we would. I mean, we are trying to look for a solution to a problem that was caused by a whole lot of things that were done. And so what I'd like to do is be able to go back with the commissioner and others and just see if this is an avenue, since, again, we can't keep everything equal. What we're talking about would not put, from what I see, and I'd like to make sure, a disadvantage to the other refineries that are here by putting it on the quality bank because of who they sell to. I don't think they're even in direct competition, again, because we're refining using diesel, not gas. Gas that in the Cook Inlet that is not taxed, that Anchorage has been able to grow on while we've had diesel in the interior. And if we had gas affordable, which hopefully the trucking would do, would also make it more economical. And I do agree that I do think there's some legal reasons that we can at least help this refinery because of the things that had happened and really put the money where it needs to be so that they can get healthy again and we don't necessarily unequally spread it around to those that may not need it.
I'm not going to ask for anything from Matt Valley and Chugiak because I'm regionally pure.
And we appreciate that.
That's Representative Costello and then Edgeman.
Thank you. Commissioner, my question just has to do with the timing aspect, and I'm just wanting to know how long you've been working on considering the three options. You mentioned two were rejected, and then there's the one before us.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Costello, normally, when we are going to pursue legislation or make proposals to the legislature, the process that we engage in on the executive branch side typically begins in August. There's a predictable cycle. We start with an indication to the governor's office that there are certain topics that we would like to see addressed by the legislature, and there's a whole round of cycle of vetting that goes on first internally within an agency, then across other agencies, and ultimately with the Department of Law, and finally with the governor. That is the normal course that we pursue legislation and legislative ideas. In this case, we did not have a specific proposal in mind and up for consideration in August. We did not think that that there was anything so dire as to warrant action, and we didn't have a specific idea or concept in mind to pursue. We did have some conversations about Quality Bank matters. We were keeping an eye on the spread between WTI and ANS. We saw the narrowing start to occur. You know, we thought we can wait this out. Let's get this Quality Bank matter either resolved at the FERC or settled at the FERC, and then turn our attention to whatever longer run problems there may be. On February 4th, when the news came that Flint Hills was closing, it landed with a thunderclap. You know, it was something that took me by complete surprise. And and there were a number of things that followed soon after, questions that, you know, were raised internally, a subset of the cabinet meeting with the governor and the chief of staff on a very frequent basis soon after. And we needed to understand first what the heck was going on with Flint Hills. Was there anything we could do about it? And as we began to consider what else was going on, one of the things that dawned on me was the revenue requirement for the lines that run between TAPS and the North Pole refinery facilities. The revenue requirement for those lines in 2013 was $4.5 million, and that revenue requirement was met by both refineries on an 85-15 ratio of 85%. 15% was paid by PetroStar. And that meant that if, in fact, Flint Hills closed, did not have a buyer, and was going to leave PetroStar as the only customer utilizing those two pipelines, that their bill was going to climb from what was less than $1 million a year to $4.5 million a year. Now, I had understood that 2012 was a very, very thin margin for PetroStar, and that 2013 was probably break even at best. And so I called Mr. Chapados to ask him if my understanding of that cost consequence was correct. He confirmed it. And the next question I asked was, oh my God, are you going to close too? And they could not give me an answer in the month of February. The reason is because they renew their crude contracts in March. and the severity of the situation was such that they didn't know if they were going to renew. For 1 year, their crude supply contracts to continue operating. They wanted to know what it is we thought would go on, what it is we might be able to do, and ultimately that led us to ask, what is it going to take to keep you operating? Because we understand the consequences if you don't. And the answer back was, you could sell us crude at a discounted price. The cost of crude and the quality bank are the two issues that are just killing them. And, you know, the quality bank, there's not a lot we can do about. We can try to work out a settlement among all the parties. But otherwise, if all the parties don't agree to a settlement, we'll be left in the hands of an adjudicator at the FERC. And we don't know how long that'll take. So with regard to selling royalty to them at a discount, we considered that quite seriously. In fact, we considered that first. But because of the risks to the rest of our royalty production from a price and value perspective, we ultimately dismissed that. We began looking at tax credits and this package probably in the middle of March, and spent a little bit of time thinking through the options and alternatives associated with it. And a process that we go through that starts in August and ends in January got compressed into about 3 weeks. So I'm certain that the bills we introduce in January get improved by the legislature, even when we've had 5 months to prepare them. One that's prepared in 3 weeks, I'm sure, can be improved even more.
Representative Benjamin?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that's kind of where my thinking is going with all this tonight as well, is that, I think the argument that this problem is systemic, it's been more than just a year or two in coming. Perhaps the suddenness of it all, more or less relating to Flint Hills in terms of where PetroStar's at and what have you. The argument that this is more than just the three military bases, the Coast Guard and the international airport, it really is statewide at impact. I get that. There is a long line of dominoes that are out there that were to fall if we don't do something. So I'm here to really push for doing something, Mr. Chairman. I don't know where your thinking is or where other committee members' thinking might be at, but in my thinking, I'm at the point where, and like the commissioner just stated, sometimes it takes more than one try to get things right.
I tell you, my intent tonight, I was hoping to adopt the amendment to have something to work from, and then that gives a constructive point to correct, amend, and so forth. That's where I was going with this, knowing it's not the final resting point. We're dealing with this issue. It's real hard to deal from a blank piece of paper. It's when you're trying to edit something, it's hard to edit a blank piece of paper. If we have a plan, even if it's viewed to be flawed, and I think there's universal consensus of levels of discomfort, even from the sponsors of about this. So that was my intent. This is almost like adopting a committee substitute to work off of, and it is very hard to edit a blank page, which we don't have, and we can construct and deconstruct and improve and amend, but it's real tough. I know when I start I have my staff, I write my own letters, but I like my staff to start them because it's easier to criticize something else, and reconstruct. That's what I'm hoping to put on the table, this amendment. Not as the final product, but as a working document, if that answers your question.
Mr. Chairman, it doesn't answer my question, unfortunately.
It doesn't?
No.
Okay, that's why I was trying to – I was trying to – what our plan was today, and it's not
no,
not to
no, move I, I appreciate your attempt to lay your position out, but I guess where I'm at, in fairness to maybe others around the table as well, is that that we do need a plan B here, and I don't see it at the table here in front of us. That's where I'm at. But I want to be on record as strongly supporting doing something, and something that works. So that's, I mean, I'll just chime in with my two cents.
Yeah. Representative Kara, and then Holmes, and then Guttenberg.
Thank you. Mr. Balash, since we don't have anybody's books open, these are the only numbers I know. That Petrostar has said their profits have not been great the last few years. That one of the big causes until Flint Hills went out of business was that we have this periodic situation where ANS is fetching a higher price, a much higher price than West Coast crude. That flips back and forth over time. I've seen it a few times. And that there's been an extra cost by Flint Hills going out of business to Petrostar of about $4 million a year. And one of the things is the hope that, well, it both benefits and doesn't benefit the state when Alaska oil prices go down, but at some point, just based on history, price normalcy will return, but we don't know when. I'm hoping you can consider some sort of financing provision just to distressed companies. I mean, there's something in this amendment right now that talks about the commissioner has to make a best interest finding. So I'm sure you can come up with language that the commissioner has to make some finding to justify the low interest loan so everybody in the world doesn't get it. And then the testimony yesterday was the company needed a few years to maybe find ways to make their operations more efficient. And if you could just think about the concept of a loan that's available to companies that meet a certain standard. You've got one standard in this bill, best interests, and I would not object to a repayment holiday to let the company get a breather, and then I would ask that you think through some sort of option like that, but. That's it.
Thank you, Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just I seem to be the only one around the table that hasn't talked yet. So just as this conversation is going on, I've been listening a lot, and I've been I think most people around the table. I walked in here on Wednesday, and as you mentioned earlier, you saw the sticker shock around the table. I talked to more people about it. I thought about it some more. Talked to you about it. Talked to some other people about it. I've definitely moved in my thinking. I think I'd very much like to associate myself with the comments by Representative Edgman. I do think we need to do something. I am not yet comfortable voting to put this amendment in the bill. I'm just not there yet. I think we need to do something. It might end up being something very similar to this, or it might be something different, but I just haven't. It's a really big fiscal note, and I just don't have enough information and enough comfort yet to vote tonight for the amendment to go in.
Thank you. Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, is it... It seems to me that ADA is the vehicle, and that's, of course, just me talking, but they have the ability through fairly simple legislation, I believe, to have the ability to bond and to take care of industries out there. And I don't think it would take that long, and maybe you can speak to it, but I don't think it would take that long to sit down with ADA and come up with that language, because they do it all the time. We've done it before. We know what the process is. That places that out before us.
We have an ADA bill in committee on Sunday. ADA, Heartache Development Program Fund. That's a good suggestion, Representative Oster.
Tis the season.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The I would be happy to inquire with the folks at ADA. I know we did discuss with them, you know, the possibility to refinance the pipelines between TAPS and the refineries in North Pole. What we found in that particular context was financing anything without some surety that it's going to continue to be in business and be an option raised a lot of red flags.
They seem to have a well-financed guarantor.
But we would be happy to rouse Mr. Ted from his weekend.
Get him off the Lieutenant Governor's campaign. Representative Wilson, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to rescind amendment number one. Replacement.
Well, we haven't adopted it, so withdraw.
Okay, withdraw replacement amendment number one.
We will, I don't know, we will stop action tonight and, beg your pardon?
Talk about it tomorrow.
Yeah, talk about it. We'll talk about it tomorrow, and I appreciate the members from North Pole and Fairbanks there bringing forth what they viewed was a constructive solution, and it has led to some interesting dialogue and some questions, obviously, and we will see where we can go from here. So we will Representative Bailiff, or Mr. Commissioner Bailiff.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the latitude you've shown in allowing us to pursue this amendment on this particular piece of legislation. I would observe that it is a House bill, and it is getting late in the session. I am confident, highly confident, that the underlying measure, the approval of the royalty contract, is not controversial, and if and when we're able to move it to the floor, it will move rather quickly through the remainder of the process. But I just want to make sure so that I can confirm with the counterparty on this contract, Tesoro, that by not taking action tonight, we're not somehow sacrificing the bill.
Commissioner, there's another bill in the Senate Finance Committee, and they certainly have an ability to deliberate as well, and they, for whatever reason, have chosen to wait for us. We can get a foot race going.
Mr. Chair, can I admit a mistake at some point?
Beg your pardon?
Oh, I was hoping to admit a mistake at some point.
I'm sure it'll be a qualified admission, but go ahead.
I'll try not to qualify it. Mr. Chair, obviously, there's no need to get to amendment number two, but I had one day to come up with something, and it's not well written as I read through it. So I don't think that's qualified, but anyway, I'm looking forward to the continued discussion. Thank you.
And I assume it was your intent in adopting this amendment. You were presupposing adoption of number one, or you were assuming its failure.
I was actually presupposing that when I got this from legal, it would have more sideboards. That's what I was. Okay.
No, thank you. Thank you for the honest dialogue around this table. And it's we understand the calendar pages and the clock ticking. I'm very conscious of that. And let folks get if they get home, they might get 8 hours sleep if you get home right away. We have an 8 o'clock meeting tomorrow morning. It's public testimony on the gas line bill, and hopefully they will take these hours tonight to read it, as we will too, as it's been modified by the other committee.
One more mistake. Yeah.
It was not legal's fault. I should have given them more sideboards, so just so that nobody, they're not on record being the blameworthy party.
I think they're hanging on every word.
You don't want to blame somebody for something they didn't do wrong.
With that, good night and happy adjournment for the night.
Thank you.